Good afternoon, good morning, good day, depending on where you're listening from. Welcome to Profit and Beauty. Now, this show was created for salon owners who have decided to start running their salons like a business rather than a hustle. The focus of the show is to help salon owners understand the numbers behind their business so that they can grow and make extraordinary profits. Without this knowledge, it's really hard, if not impossible, for your salon to reach its true potential. My name is Desiree Anderson, and I have 19 years experience as a hairstylist and salon owner. I currently work as a certified public accountant, working mainly with salon owners and hairstylists. My background as a former stylist and salon owner gives me a much better understanding of what our industry professionals need and desire. So if you are a hairstylist or salon owner interested in running your salon like a business, then this show is for you. On the other hand, if you are a hairstylist or salon owner not interested in running your salon like a business, this show may or may not be for you. I just hope you keep listening and maybe something you hear in one of the episodes will make you decide to turn your craft from a hustle into a business that you can scale and grow. So sit back and enjoy this week's episode. Hi everyone, and thanks again for joining me on today's show. Today I'm going to be talking about a topic that scares the bejesus out of most red-blooded Americans. And that's getting audited by the IRS, or the state for that matter. Now, people don't realize that the state can be even more brutal than the IRS can be sometimes. Now, lately, for some reason, I've been noticing a recent uptick in the amount of salons and hairstylists that are being audited by the IRS. Now, overall, it's not surprising to me because the IRS has been known to audit cash-intensive businesses. Now, cash-intensive businesses are businesses that do a lot of cash transactions. Now, hair salons, restaurants, convenience stores, and just about any business that collects a large sum of cash during the course of business. Now, when your client pays you using cash, there is no record of the money that you received, especially if you don't deposit the money into some sort of an account. So the IRS gets really creative when they are auditing businesses that they believe are not reporting all of their income. They use a lot of backdoor methods to try to figure out exactly how much money you or your business actually made. Now, outside of the methods, like looking at your salon's purchases for any given year to try to figure out how much money the salon actually brought in, they also have the authority to perform something that's called a lifestyle audit. Now, a lifestyle audit is extremely invasive. And basically what they do is they try to find out if your lifestyle matches up to the amount of money that you claimed you made in any given year. Now this means digging into all of your personal effects and trying to come up with a price tag on your lifestyle. Now believe you me, that is absolutely no fun. So cash-based businesses like salons are often targeted for random audits, meaning that the audit is being conducted through absolutely no fault of your own, but sometimes your tax return may flag you or your business. So today, I'm going to be talking about 10 red flags that can trigger an IRS audit for a hair salon. Okay, so here we go. Number one, make sure that your deductions are realistic, reasonable, and typical for the beauty industry. Now, I've seen people include everything, including the kitchen sink, as part of their deductible expenses. Now, this is a quick way to invite the IRS inside of your personal and your business space to perform an audit. So try to stay away from questionable items. Let's say, for example, expenses like online booking software, a trip to a trade show, or a large bill for the purchase of hair extensions are all considered typical for our industry. On the other hand, an expensive trip out of the country or the purchase of an entire living room set are not typical deductions for the salon industry, and therefore they may trigger some type of inquiry. So the general rule is that your allowable expenses includes money that you spend to make money. So talking about a purchase of large hair extensions. Now, of course, within our industry, that's going to be normal. But if a person who, say, is a bartender who also wears extensions, if she decided to put on her tax return a large order of hair extensions, for that particular industry, it's going to trigger an audit, or it could, I should say, not that it's going to, it could trigger an audit because the purchase of large amounts of hair as a bartender isn't normal. On the other hand, for our industry, it's normal. Number two, avoid categorizing expenses as miscellaneous. Now, I see this one all the time, either because a person isn't sure how to categorize an expense or because it's just plain easier to lump all of your expenses into one account rather than taking the time to properly categorize each expense. Now, the problem with this method of bookkeeping is that the IRS gets mighty suspicious when they see a large amount on the miscellaneous expense line. So why is this, you ask? Well, because they automatically think that you're hiding purchases that are normally not ordinarily deductible. And what better way to hide such purchases than to lump them on a line that doesn't require you to list what the item is that you actually purchase? So keep miscellaneous deductions to a minimum. So if you purchase something, let's say for $20,000 or say for $10,000, and you just put it on the miscellaneous line, now the IRS has absolutely no idea what that is. And people, they really do hide purchases that they know aren't deductible inside of miscellaneous. So that's one of the reasons why the IRS normally gets a bit suspicious when they see something that says, or rather when they see a large dollar amount that says miscellaneous expenses. Number three, claiming excessive business miles. Now, let me first start by saying that commuting from your home to your place of work is not considered a deductible mileage. Now, if you work from home and you have to go, say, to the store to purchase supplies, or if you have to drive from your salon to the store to purchase supplies, those miles are deductible. Also, if you are a mobile stylist and you drive from your home to visit a client, those miles are also deductible. Now, when I used to be an auditor, I used to come across returns where people claimed such high miles for the type of industry they were in. And I used to set those returns aside for a possible audit. So don't fall into that trap. Make sure that your mileage is reasonable. Now, one more thing about mileage deduction. Make sure that you keep a record of your mileage because the IRS has been known to deny the deduction if you don't have records showing your actual mileage details. Now, you can record your miles manually with a notebook and pen, which is the old-fashioned way of doing it, or you can use one of the mileage apps that records your mileage for you. And to me, using the mileage app is a whole lot easier and a lot more accurate. And also, it's done right then and there. Versus if you wait and say, okay, I'm going to log my miles with a pen and paper every time I go somewhere and come back, you know, more than likely you're going to forget to do that. And as you forget and time goes on, you're going to actually forget the number of miles that have gone unrecorded. So I do suggest, or I do advise, that you use some type of app to maintain or to keep track of your miles. Number four, an error on your return that is not made by you. Now, this particular red flag can be avoided if you file your return electronically instead of mailing the return to the IRS. Because when you mail your return to the IRS, the information on your return is manually inputted by an IRS worker. And when this happens, numbers can get transposed, they can get omitted, or some numbers can even get added to. So this mistake is entirely out of your control, but can cause the red flag to go up, which in turn can cause your return to be audited. Now, normally the error rates for paper returns are much, much higher than that of electronically filed returns. So my advice is to get your return electronically filed if you can help it. Number five, your media presence. Now, this one was fairly new back in 2011 when I first started using this method to research taxpayers that I was auditing. Now, I loved it because I didn't have to work nearly as hard to figure out all of the sources of income a person I was auditing had. So why do you think this was? Well, because all the information was neatly laid out for me on their social media pages. It was like hitting the lottery because there was so much information I could use to make my case. In this day and age, people use social media to let others know what kind of business they have and also to let them know the types of products and services that they offer. Even if the income that they receive from these businesses are not reported on their tax returns. So the most common excuse I heard from not reporting income when I was auditing a taxpayer was, I didn't make that much money, so I didn't think I had to file a tax return. Well, for your information, if you're self-employed and you make over $400 in any given year, you're required by law to file a tax return. So with the social media presence and with people going on social media, sometimes bragging and maybe sometimes not even bragging, just telling the truth of how great they're doing, all the money that they're making, and how this new project that they have started, or how this area they have entered into is generating all of this income. They're not really thinking about people like myself, well, not me, not anymore, but back in the day, auditors snooping through their social media to see exactly what they're saying. That information can be used against you in an audit. So keep in mind, as you go on social media and you decide to put all your business out there, remember that that information is no longer private and it can be used against you in an audit case. Number six, employing booth renters rather than employees. Now, this one usually only affects businesses that hire a lot of stylists who happen to be booth renters. Or if you have a salon that hires both booth renters and commission stylists. Now, having both booth renters and commission stylists is a red flag because the IRS or whatever other agency that's allowed to audit your business for employment infractions, they may suspect that you are classifying employees as independent contractors because you're trying to avoid paying payroll taxes. Now, a large number of employers usually misclassify their workers as independent contractors instead of employees for this very reason. Now, some employers do make an honest misclassification error, while others intentionally misclassify workers so that they, the employer, can dodge the responsibility of withholding tax from their employees, and so they can avoid having to pay the employer portion of Social Security and Medicaid tax, which is called payroll expenses. So when you're paying your workers' portion of Social Security and Medicare tax, that's an expense to the business. So that's coming out of your profits, okay? And that's one reason why sometimes you have business owners who would rather pay their employees as contractors, because when they pay their employees as contractors, they don't have to pay payroll tax on these contractors. And the IRS, you know, they're very aware of this, and they're very hip to this. And that's one of the reasons why they're very particular when it comes to employees versus contractors and making sure that a business is correctly classifying each worker. Now, the employer's portion of payroll taxes can become very costly as you start to hire additional employees. Now, regardless of your reason for not complying with payroll law, the IRS frowns heavily on employee misclassifications. So the penalties and the interests can be quite staggering. And as I mentioned in one of my other podcasts, the IRS is not the only government agency you should worry about when it comes to payroll audits. Your State Department of Revenue can audit you. Some insurance companies have the right to audit you. The unemployment office can audit you. And even workers' compensation carriers. Now, all of these agencies have a stake in how a worker is classified, and they all have the power to audit your business for issues related to employee misclassifications. So it's really important to make sure that you try to classify your employees correctly. I understand that paying that payroll tax can be a huge hit, but if you should ever get audited and your workers should happen to be reclassified from independent contractors to employees, that can be even more expensive. So my advice is to always try to make sure that you are classifying each worker properly. Number 7, excessive business meal deductions. Now, although business meals are deductible, deducting an excessive amount is a red flag. So the question becomes, what is considered excessive? Well, it really depends. It actually depends on the type of business that you have. Now, as salon owners and hairstylists, your deduction for meals likely will not be as high as a salesperson whose job it is to wine and dine potential clients who they are trying to build a long-term relationship with. Now, one thing you can't do is take out your entire family for a meal and then expense the cost of that meal. Now, I know that may sound pretty obvious, but believe it or not, I do have clients who come into my office during tax time, and when I ask them questions about their business meals to make sure that it's in line with IRS requirements, some of them tell me that, oh yeah, that's an expense that I had taking my family out. And it's not that they're necessarily trying to get over on the IRS, they just don't know. Some people truly just don't know. And then you have others who are trying to game the system. But either way, as long as we all understand that the only meals that can be deducted are business meals. So as long as the expense amount is reasonable, you should be okay. And also one other thing, to qualify for the deduction, you have to keep detailed records that document the restaurant you went to, the people you took out, the business purpose of the event, and the nature of the meeting. Now, if you don't document these things, the IRS is within its rights to deny the entire deduction. So make sure that you keep detailed notes when you're deducting business meals. Number 8, reporting only credit card income. Now, because the IRS is very aware that the hair salon industry is a cash-intensive business, showing only the income received from credit card sales is a huge audit red flag. So I know your next question is, how will they know the income on your tax return represents only or mostly credit card transactions? Well, your credit card company or any other type of third-party provider that you use to process payments usually send the IRS a 1099-K showing all of the income that they processed for your business. If the total income on your tax return is close to the amount of all of the 1099-Ks combined, you're basically saying that you didn't have or you had very little cash sales. Now, granted, nowadays, most people pay with credit cards or debit cards rather than cash. However, the IRS knows that this doesn't necessarily apply to all types of businesses, and our business being one of them. Because as I mentioned earlier on when I first started the show, our industry is a cash-intensive industry in the eyes of the IRS. So they expect that we should have quite a bit of cash sales. And if they don't see that, they become suspicious and then it can throw up a red flag. Number 9, out of proportion deductions. So large deductions that reduce the amount of your taxable income may raise a red flag if the deduction is not in proportion with your income. This can either be business expense deductions or even charitable contributions. So for example, if you claim charitable deductions that are not in line with your income, that raises a red flag because the IRS may become a little suspicious. For charitable contributions, we're allowed to deduct 60% of our adjusted gross income on our personal return. So let's say you took it to the max, which is 60%, meaning if you brought in, let's just say $100,000, and then you decided to contribute $60,000 to a charitable contribution, which means that you left $40,000 for yourself. So you basically contributed 60% of your adjusted gross income. Now you can see how the IRS might flag you for an audit. Now it's not illegal to contribute what you are allowed to contribute, which is 60%. It's your right to contribute whatever your heart desires. But it still may be a red flag under those circumstances, only because the IRS already views our industry as a heavily cash business. So they may view large contributions from taxpayers of cash intensive industries as a reason to examine a return. Now, also remember, charitable contributions are only deductible on your personal return if you are a sole proprietor, a partner in a partnership, an LLC or an S corporation. Only C corporations are allowed to deduct charitable contributions directly on their business returns. Also, if your salon's income is low for that year, but your deductions are larger than normal for that income range, that can also throw up a flag. Now, sometimes having higher deductions than normal is legitimate, especially when you first start your business or during some type of recession. So you should absolutely take all of the deductions that you're entitled to, but be sure you have detailed records to back them up. So in other words, the IRS is saying that if you bring in a certain amount of income, they expect a certain percentage of that to be deductible. And if you go over that phantom percentage, they start looking at the return a little deeper. But that, all that being said, they do understand that if you are a new business, that you are likely going to have more deductions and less revenue because you're brand new. So they'll usually give you about 2 to 3 years. After the third year, if you're still having such high deductions, or if you're having losses 3 years in, then they may try to determine whether or not what you're doing is actually a business or if it's a hobby that you're taking expenses on. Because with a hobby, you're only allowed to deduct up to the amount of income that comes in. So if you have a hobby and your hobby brought in $5,000, but the expenses for that hobby was $8,000, you're only allowed to deduct $5,000. You can't deduct more than you make. So this is the reason why when you have a business that has been running for over 3 years and you're still having tons of deductions, or in this case, if you're having losses, then at the third year, the IRS may want to examine your tax return to make sure that this is a viable business and not some type of hobby that you are using to avoid paying your share of income taxes. And the number 10 IRS audit red flag is claiming business losses year after year. Now, this particular one is similar to what I was just talking about in number 9. So claiming business losses year after year, the IRS will likely flag your return if you claim that your business is having a loss year after year after year after year. And they will likely initiate an audit. Now, the IRS knows that some people claim hobby losses as business losses. And under the tax code, that's illegal. If you run a legitimate business that continuously reports a loss, the IRS may assume that you are taking deductions you are not entitled in order to avoid paying taxes. But now, if your business is experiencing a few bad years, as long as you can prove that your business is a legitimate business and not a hobby, and you can justify your deductions, you'll sail right through an audit with no problem whatsoever. You'll actually sail through swimmingly with absolutely no change to your tax return. Now, I sat through an audit with a client a few years ago. Now, she was a hairstylist and she also claimed to be a realtor. And when I say claimed, I'm not saying that she wasn't, because she did have a license, so she was an actual licensed realtor. Now, the IRS flagged her for an audit because she claimed that her real estate business had a loss for 3 years in a row. Now, the loss that she claimed reduced her net income by about $50,000. So she was making pretty good money as a hairstylist. She was in the three figures, and every year she showed a $50,000 loss from her real estate business, which reduced her total net income by that amount. So even when I looked at her return, because she wasn't a client of mine, she came to me because she was undergoing an audit. So of course I wanted to review her returns. So even after I looked at her returns and asked her a few questions, I could tell that she was using her real estate business to reduce her main income. So I basically told her not to fight it, because she doesn't want the IRS to take out their magnifying glass and go over her return line by line by line. Now, in her case, the IRS was only auditing her mileage and her meals and entertainment. And that's it. That's all they were looking at, because she had extremely high miles. And most of that $50,000, believe it or not, came from mileage and meals and entertainment, which in and of itself is a red flag. So forget the fact that she was taking losses year after year. The fact that these losses consisted of mileage and meals and entertainment, which those two particular deductions in by themselves, the IRS tend to be very suspicious about those types of deductions when they're high. And most of hers consisted of that. And of course, she tries to claim that because she's a realtor, she had to drive around showing people houses. But when you look at the amount of mileage she had and the amount of money that she made as a hairstylist, you start to wonder, well, how much time did you actually spend in the salon if you're riding around with clients? So basically, they wanted to examine her meal and entertainment and her mileage. So they requested to look at a mileage log, which she didn't have. And they also requested to look at all of her receipts for her meals and entertainment to make sure that all of the receipts had the proper information on there to prove that she, number one, took out clients. Number two, what was the purpose of the meal? Number three, where did the meal happen? Number four, what time was the meal? She had nothing. So she had no receipts and she had no mileage log. And in addition to that, she wasn't even able to recreate these things. So sometimes, even when your mileage, if you don't have a mileage log and you're being audited, the IRS will allow you to recreate a mileage log if you can remember that information. But most people can't remember what happened a week ago, let alone trying to figure out the mileage from a year ago. Unless you have a consistent route, if you have a consistent route and you know that you always take that route, then you can recalculate those miles. In her case, she's a realtor. There was no consistent route. She was supposedly going from one place to another. And of course, she wasn't able to recreate that. So under those circumstances, we just went ahead and agreed with the IRS's findings, and she had to pay the additional tax. Now, as I mentioned, the IRS can request to examine just one area of your tax return. For example, they may only want to look at the charitable contributions. So if they look at your charitable contributions and in their eyes, it seems to be a little off or a little bit high, they may examine your tax return, but the only thing that they're going to examine is going to be your charitable contributions. They won't go looking elsewhere. Now, every now and then, when they are doing a review of your return and they're only requesting to look at one particular area, something else while they're looking at the area can trigger them to start looking at another area. So with the IRS, it just depends. You never know what they're going to do. They pretty much have carte blanche to do whatever they want. So I always say, try to be on your P's and Q's. Try and have all of your receipts. Try to make sure that you are reasonable with your deductions. And, you know, if you do that, if you do everything you're supposed to do, you should be okay if you should ever encounter an IRS audit. Okay, good people, that's all I have time for today. Once again, I'd like to thank each and every one of you for taking the time out of your busy day to listen to my show. And feel free to contact me at Desiree@AndersonAccounting3.com if you have any questions. And hopefully, I'll see you all next time. Have a great day, everyone.